Well, I'm very sorry to read today that at least $3,000 worth of artwork was stolen from booths at the East Lansing Art Festival over the weekend. This according to R.J. Wolcott of the Lansing State Journal. Bala Thiarajan, a Chicago artist, says six of her paintings were stolen from her booth either late Saturday evening or early Sunday morning. Scott Rigglesworth of the ELPD says two other artists' work was also stolen over the weekend. The department's detective bureau is investigating. And that just in courtesy of this morning's Lansing State Journal. We are sorry to read that here today. It's Current State. We're back live with you here today, and we're glad you're along. In November, Ingham County voters will choose a new prosecutor. Longtime prosecutor Stuart Dunnings III is facing criminal charges and will formally resign in July. Former State Senator Gretchen Whitmer has been appointed interim prosecutor from July through the end of the year. She's not running for the full term that will begin in January. But there are six candidates for the full-time, for the ongoing job, and we're inviting them all to appear here on Current State. We've already heard from Republican Billy Joe O'Berry and Democrat Brian Jackson. Another of the Democrats is our first guest today. Patrick O'Keefe is an attorney in private practice with a background that includes both defense and prosecution. Former Michigan Attorney General Frank Kelly has endorsed his campaign. Patrick O'Keefe, welcome to Current State.
Good morning, Mark. Thanks for having me.
Share just a few of your main reasons for wanting to be the Ingham County prosecutor.
Well, Mark, I'm looking to restore integrity back to the prosecutor's office. I think that the people of Ingham County deserve an exceptional amount of leadership from their chief law enforcement officer. And also, we need to invest in our community, and we need to invest in our assistant prosecuting attorneys. Most assistant prosecutors nowadays who work in a prosecutor's office are career public servants, and we have some exceptional lawyers who are there working at the Ingham County Prosecutor's Office. And so I'm looking forward to stepping in and becoming a leader to them and becoming a resource to them. I'm a board-certified criminal trial attorney. I'm one of only two board-certified criminal trial attorneys in the state of Michigan, and I think that Ingham County needs a top-notch trial attorney to step back in and restore order. The third reason I'm running is I'm looking to get community leaders more involved and get law enforcement, community leaders, the prosecutor's office, our faith-based leaders involved in this process, because it's important that we reach out to the community and that we have good community resources available to us. And that it's really important for the chief law enforcement officer of the county to also be receptive to the concerns of the public and really listen and open our ears and hear people's concerns.
You've defined these as the three I's of your campaign, correct? Integrity, investment, and involvement?
That's correct.
Would you argue that the county is underinvested in the prosecutor's office right now?
I would not argue that. I don't believe that they're underinvested. I think that the county has appropriately funded the prosecutor's office. There are approximately 35 assistant prosecuting attorneys. When I say investment, I don't necessarily mean a financial investment. I mean an investment in terms of the way we practice law, in terms of the way assistant prosecuting attorneys carry out their constitutional and ethical duties. I'm talking about reinvesting in our current employees through training programs with the Prosecuting Attorneys Association of Michigan. And having our prosecutors understand that it is not just their job to obtain convictions. It's their jobs as ministers of justice to do justice. And sometimes that means being receptive to the rights of the criminally accused. And we have to make sure that we don't make the same kind of mistakes that other prosecutors have made in the past. And I learned that lesson from my mentor and a person who's endorsed me, Frank Kelly. Nobody has more integrity than Frank Kelly. And when you go into an Ingham County courtroom and you stand before an Ingham County jury, whether it be a drunk driving case or a murder case, you need to stand there with integrity, and the public needs to understand that you are there representing the people of the state of Michigan. And our attorneys need to do a good job, and they are doing a good job, of getting into that courtroom and making sure that the jury understands they're not there to get a conviction. They're there to do justice.
You served as an assistant prosecutor here in Ingham County as well as in Kent County. You left to open a private practice in 2013. How many years did you spend here in Ingham County as an assistant?
I was an assistant prosecutor in Ingham County for 6 years. I came here in the fall of 2007, and I left in the summer of 2013.
How did that shape you? What did you learn about the community during your those 6 years here in Ingham County?
I learned that the community yearns for a minister of justice, someone who can be a champion for not only the victims that we represent, who we have a constitutional duty to represent, but also just being a representative of the community and ensuring that we do justice in our courtrooms and outside of our courtrooms, ensuring that the rights of the criminally accused are not trampled over.
Now, on the website for your law practice, O'Keefe Law, there's a long list of cases where you were able to get charges reduced or sentences deferred. Results for clients you've defended in cases often related to drunk driving, minor in possession of alcohol, and other charges, up to and including felonious assault and at least one murder charge. That would seem to be a positive record for a defense attorney. But again, go a little deeper with us here. How does that translate into your desire to become a prosecutor again? Can you be tough on crime with a record like that?
Absolutely, Mark. I can be tough on crime. Not only I can be tough on crime, but I have been tough on crime. As an assistant prosecutor in Ingham County, I was the first assistant prosecutor in the history of the county to convict a person of being a violent habitual offender, in which case the mandatory minimum prison sentence for that individual who had carjacked a woman praying over a loved one's grave, stolen her car, and fled from the police. I prosecuted that individual in front of Judge Collette out in Mason. We had a jury trial. A jury found him guilty of carjacking.
Who was the defendant? Who is that?
I believe his name was Byron Root.
Okay.
R-O-O-T. And additionally, Mark, I prosecuted an individual years ago who was driving drunk, heading eastbound on Miller Road at the intersection of Pennsylvania, traveling approximately 65 miles per hour with a blood alcohol level of 0.17. 3 hours after the collision, he killed a woman and her 17-year-old boy. I represented the father of the boy, the husband of the deceased woman. And I can tell you, Mark, there's no harder feeling than to sit in a room with a man who said goodbye to his wife and his son as they went down the road to take a video back to the video store, and those people never came back because his wife and his son were killed at the hands of a drunk driver. Not only did we prosecute that individual, but we prosecuted him for second-degree murder. He was going 65 to 75 miles an hour. He ran a red light, and he was, his blood alcohol level was like a 0.17, 3 hours after the collision. And he's doing 15 years in prison.
Well, these are dramatic cases that would seem to be slam dunks for a prosecutor here. What about the cases? I mean, you've also referred to your desire for justice here, too. You've got to keep the defendant's rights. You've got to have a balanced approach here. How do you walk that tightrope?
Well, it's a good question. I think you have to be receptive and you have to listen. There are a lot of cases where the prosecutor and even the detective who's investigating the case doesn't know all the facts of the case. And I've had cases when I was an assistant prosecutor where one of the defense attorneys came to me and he said, "I don't believe that your victim is being truthful about this. It was a rape allegation." And he stated to me that he felt that the victim was not being truthful because of a conversation that the defense attorney had with his client. And I brought the victim, the alleged victim, in, and I sat her down and I asked her if that was true. And she told me that the defendant's version of the offense was true and that she was not actually raped. And we immediately dismissed the case. Mm-hmm.
We are talking with one of four Democrats in the running to be Ingham County's next prosecutor. Our guest here today is Patrick O'Keefe. You're also pushing here for more involvement with community leaders. This is one of your three I's. Which leaders and what kind of involvement would you seek?
Well, I think we need to start with the local mayors, the local townships. We need to start with the local councils. And we need to be receptive to their concerns because the problems that we're having in the criminal justice system are occurring in their streets. And we have an opioid epidemic, Mark, in our society.
That was
today.
My next question. Here.
And with the epidemic of opioid abuse, we are not successfully treating this problem by doing the old song and dance of having people be incarcerated, go into prisons for possession of controlled substance, and expect these people to come out and somehow be rehabilitated. That's why our community leaders, our substance abuse treatment programs, our physicians, our psychologists, our psychiatrists, our social workers, our church leaders, we all need to be involved because we cannot treat addiction by throwing someone in jail. Addiction is caused by two reasons, trauma and isolation. People are often traumatized at a young age, whether it's physical or emotional abuse, and isolation. People forget about them.
What about Lansing's the marijuana landscape here in Lansing? There will be a moratorium here on pot shops. What kind of approach? Just talk to us broadly about your approach to marijuana. Not as addictive as an opioid by any means, but how do you prosecute those cases, and how do you walk that tightrope between the victim and a crime?
The voters resoundingly approved the Michigan Medical Marijuana Act, and it's my job as not only the prosecuting attorney, but as a citizen of this state to respect the will of the voters. Obviously, there are a number of marijuana dispensaries that are popping up throughout the state of Michigan. There are a number of dispensaries here in Lansing. But as the prosecuting attorney, Mark, as the chief law enforcement officer of the county, and as a representative of the people of the state of Michigan, we need to understand the role of the prosecuting attorney. The role of the prosecuting attorney is not to investigate allegations of criminal violations. The role of the prosecuting attorney is to review the evidence that's collected by law enforcement and presented to the prosecuting attorney and make a decision about whether or not criminal laws have been violated and about whether or not a crime should be prosecuted. I would also advise people that we need to be very careful because it is still a violation of federal law to manufacture and or distribute marijuana. And I've heard stories recently here in Lansing where a marijuana dispensary was in fact raided by the feds. So people need to caution themselves and people need to be very careful to understand that it's still a federal controlled substance. The federal government does not recognize it as a legal substance. However, in terms of the state law, I respect and I recognize the rights of medical marijuana patients who are acting lawfully and according to the care of their physician.
You got to navigate a lot of local ordinances here, too.
It's not my job to prosecute local ordinances in most cases. It's my job to prosecute violations of state law. And so local ordinances are really not in my purview.
Are you taking a position on Sheriff Wrigglesworth's call for building a new county jail?
I have not taken a position on that, Mark. We don't have enough facts yet. I would like to see more data. I would like to see more facts. And I really like to know how much it's going to cost because I'm very sensitive to the taxpayers' money. And I don't want to spend a jail for $20 million more, if that be the case, in another location. If it's going to be on the backs of our taxpayers. So I'd like to see more information on that before I take a position.
I'd like to ask you about the process by which Gretchen Whitmer was chosen to be interim prosecutor. She begins serving in that role in July, and will serve that out for the rest of the year. And then obviously a new prosecutor will be elected in November. But there has been some criticism of that process. The City Pulse's Mickey Hurton writes that the post is an elected one, as we all know. This time it wasn't, though, and the circuit court judges hid, according to Mr. Hurton, the circuit court judges hid how and why they picked Gretchen Whitmer. Does he have a point there?
Well, first of all, Mark, the circuit judges had no choice but to appoint someone. They could not leave that position vacant once Mr. Dunning's resignation becomes effective on July 2nd. It is their duty by statute to appoint a prosecuting attorney. I have no idea what went into their decision. However, I can say this, they couldn't have made a better choice than Gretchen Whitmer. I believe she has the integrity to come in and step in and steady the ship.
Patrick O'Keefe is an attorney in private practice with a background that includes both defense and prosecution. He is one Democrat who is thrown his hat in the ring to become Ingham County's next prosecutor beginning in 2017. Patrick O'Keefe, thank you for joining us, and good luck.
Thank you, Mark.
Coming up on Current State, not far from Lansing, volunteers work to keep a small inland lake vital and to educate the public about its stewardship. We'll meet Judith Gardy, president of the Friends of Park Lake, and ask what the group would like to see and what makes Park Lake special. That's on the way on Current State. It's Current State on 90.5 WKAR. Remember, our next pop-up stories event is tomorrow evening at the Robin Theater in Lansing. Last month, our storytellers held forth on the theme, Fools Rush In. Ben Pineda shared the memorable details of his first mesmerizing encounters with the woman who would become his wife.
Wise men say, only fools rush in, but I can't help falling in love with you. And I just couldn't help it. In 2003, on a February night, I was playing volleyball in DeWitt, and into the gym comes this cute redhead, firecracker of a gal. And on the volleyball court that night, she was picking everything up and putting up sets that were just butter. And I was awestruck. And as it turns out, we became friends. We continued playing volleyball into the spring and into the summer. And that awestruck stuck. And I admired from afar. After all, she was so everything. She was so cute. She was so full of life. She was so intelligent and witty and kind-hearted and personable. And she was so in her 20s. And I, getting close to middle age, was short and bald. Admiring from afar. Well, later that summer, on a clear August night, when the planet Mars was shining so brightly and hanging low in the sky, we kissed for the first time. And that kiss changed my life. And that awestruck changed in intensity. And David Gray has a song, Please Forgive Me, where there's a line that says, that goes something to the effect of, feels like lightning running through my veins every time I look at you. And that's exactly what it was. It was lightning. It was lightning in my veins every time I looked at her, every time I thought about her, every time I was with her, even when I wasn't with her. It was lightning. 5 weeks after that first kiss, I asked her to marry me. And she said, I would love to spend the rest of my life with you. And I said, but will you marry me? And she said, yes. Megan said yes. And the rest has been a beautiful history. We were married about a year later. And this history, the most important part about it is family. That is the most important part. And to accompany my older children, Emily, my oldest, who's going to be 24 this summer, my oldest son, Matt, who just turned 22, just earlier this April, Megan and I brought into this family mix two amazing children. Connor, who about the same time, big sister is going to be graduating from state, will be turning 10. And Catherine, who later in May thinks she's turning 16, but is really turning 6. Family is the most important. And when I married Megan, I inherited her mother, Maggie, and her father, Terry. And when you say mom, and when you say dad, and when you say parents, they are mine, and I think of them. And we are so blessed that they live in East Lansing, so close to us. And there are other wonderful things, amazing things. Megan helped me to discover a passion for conservation, that being a steward to protect this fragile planet, Mother Earth of ours, is an important responsibility, priority, and duty. Megan showed me that positive thinking can heal. And over the years, I've had some crazy ideas and have made some risky decisions. And Megan has stayed with that and supported me every single step of the way. I married my most trusted life coach, my most effective healer, my favorite volleyball partner, my most passionate cheerleader, and my best friend. And I today am a better person and a wiser man because of it. Later this year in the fall, Megan and I are going to celebrate 12 years of marriage. So, 5 weeks from that first kiss to wedding proposal, fools rush in. No fools here.
Ben Pineda there telling his true first-person story at last month's Pop-Up Stories event in East Lansing. We invite you to join us tomorrow evening at Current State's next storytelling event. We're gathering at the Robin Theater in Rio Town, Lansing, for stories on the theme The Birds and the Bees. We hope you can join us. You can stay up to date on all of our upcoming events by liking our Facebook page at Pop-Up Stories Lansing. Coming up on Current State, meet the nose of Ann Arbor. She's given a TED Talk on the olfactory senses and runs a smell and tell with the Ann Arbor District Library. We will pick the brain and nothing else of Michelle Krell Kidd later on this hour. That and more after the break on Current State. Without help from caring listeners like you, WKAR would sound like any other radio station. But because of people like you, WKAR is different, better, smarter. Please help us continue to bring extraordinary programs to you and your community. Use the Give Now link at WKAR.org and make a contribution. We thank you. Quick, what body of water is situated about 8 miles northeast of downtown Lansing? And it's not Lake Lansing. Okay, that really only leaves Park Lake. Up Park Lake Road in Bath Township, Clinton County, it's easy to overlook Park Lake with the much larger Lake Lansing just a couple of miles away. Park Lake is nice enough, but at 186 acres, it's roughly a third the size of Lake Lansing and comparatively shallow, but that doesn't stop residents from enjoying Park Lake and taking pride in it. That's especially true for the members of the organization, the Friends of Park Lake. Judith Gardy is its president. Welcome to Current State.
Good morning.
According to your website, the aim of the organization is to promote and foster public awareness of natural resources of Park Lake and the surrounding watershed, in striving to educate and encourage public participation in environmental stewardship in and around Park Lake. What do you and your members spend most of your time and energy on?
One of the most valuable things for us is the partnerships that we work with cooperatively around for working on the lake and issues related to the lake. So for us to partner with Bath Township as well as Clinton County, makes a huge difference in the ability for us to maintain and improve Park Lake for the residents of Clinton County.
Does the Friends of Park Lake have specific goals or projects that it's working on?
Yes, we do. We are working on educational programs. We have improved the lake a lot in the last 3 years, and that means that we've increased the water level by having a dam and dike system constructed around the lake. And when the water rises, then we have issues related to lakeshore restoration. And so we most recently at our last meeting, we had the Department of DEQ Environmental Quality come and speak with us about lakeshore restoration and the proper things to do to restore the lakeshore, what actions you might take that need permitting, what you can do that doesn't require permitting. So basically, our goal is to educate the public about the lake and its the wonderful asset it is for the community.
Well, if the water level has increased again in recent years, well, how much has it increased?
About 2.5 to 3 feet.
And that's over how long a period of time?
Well, we built the dam 2 years ago, so 2 years.
Just a couple of years, up to 2.5 feet. Now, I know there's a beach at Park Lake that must have some impact on the beach. Have you been able to navigate the increase in the water level with the shoreline, or have there been impacts there?
Well, there are impacts whenever the water level rises in a lake, but it hasn't negatively impacted the beach or the boat launch or the fishing pier area, the public areas.
Mm. What do you think the lake needs the most or could use the most?
As residents of Bath Township, we really would like to see the southwest side of the lake developed as a nature preserve. The southwest side of the lake is about 10.5 acres of wetland. So the land over there is, you cannot develop that land. And when we had the dike and the dam built in partnership with the Clinton County Drain Commissioner, we had a flat surface put on top of the dam, which is about 8 to 10 feet wide, which makes it naturally a good area for creating a walking path. There are a few areas back there where we'd have to build some bridges to get over some of the wetlands. But one of the beauties about the area back there is that there are some natural canals, so you could go from the lake to the wetland area through the canals and enjoy the wetlands. We have nesting areas for endangered birds. We have lots of reptiles. We have a cranberry bog. There's lots to see back there that's just purely undisturbed nature.
How do most people use Park Lake right now?
Fishing and boating and swimming. We have lots of kayakers, lots of canoers. We have fishing boats. It's not a large lake. It's not a deep lake, so you can't have a big motor on the back of your boat, but we have fishing boats primarily with trolling motors. And so fishing, boating, and swimming.
No water skiing?
No.
Just not big enough to accommodate that?
No, or deep enough.
Are there environmental issues, though, with Park Lake? Is the water in the lake clean? What is the condition of the water in Park Lake?
It's very clean. It's actually cleaner than Lake Lansing.
Okay. Does it have potential uses then that your group would like to see that it doesn't offer now?
The nature preserve on the southwest side of the lake is the one that we'd really like to see. There are some additional improvements that we as an organization are working with the township on. We feel very strongly that we should have a boat wash station on the lake. When non-native invasive weeds come to the lake, they generally come in at the boat launch. So we'd like to provide a boat wash station at the boat launch so people could wash their boats off before they put them in the lake.
Judith Gardy is the president of the nonprofit The Friends of Park Lake. The 186-acre lake is situated in Bath Township in Clinton County on Park Lake Road, of course. I spoke with a guy you know yesterday, Dan Witechka, the township superintendent in Bath Township, who told me that the water in the lake is clean, but not unlike a lot of smaller inland lakes. You've got weeds in the lake, and keeping those under control is important. How big an issue are the weeds in the lake?
We have several non-native invasive weeds in the lake. The two that are most prevalent are Eurasian milfoil and a weed called starry stonewort. Luckily, like I said at the beginning, we have a tremendous partnership and work collaboratively with the township. It does take investment to keep the weeds under control in the lake. The township has invested about $27,000 in weed treatment with us this year. So we will be going after it with a full lake treatment, the Eurasian milfoil. We do that about every 7 years, and then we will continue to work on the starry stonewort. Starry stonewort came in at the boat launch about 3 years ago and now covers about 50% of the lake. Mm. So we really need to continue to work on that.
Do the Friends of Park Lake want more people using Park Lake? It seems to me you could make the case that the more people who use it, the more upkeep it might require, that kind of thing. Would you like to see more people using Park Lake?
Friends of Park Lake promotes the use of the lake. Last year, we had our first summer solstice party to reintroduce the community to the lake because for years, when the water control devices were not working properly and we were continuously losing water out of the lake, it wasn't really a very pleasant lake to be in. But now that the water control devices are fixed, last summer we had our first summer solstice party to invite the community back to the lake. We are having our second summer solstice party this year on June 18th and hope also to invite people to come back and see the lake and how beautiful it is. We are happy to have as many people visit the lake and use the lake who want to use the lake.
I also asked Dan Witechka what one single thing he would change about Park Lake if he could. Let me ask you the same question. What single thing? Would it be that southwest shoreline here, develop that?
We would really like to at least see some partial restoration of the lake. Restoration, they used to call that dredging. We would like to see certain areas. We've done a lot of mapping of the lake, and we know which areas it would be most effective. So some partial restoration of the lake would be the thing we'd want the most at this point.
What would a deeper lake do? How would that change the experience at Park Lake?
Well, primarily it would be if the lake were deeper and we did some partial restoration, then we could begin to see less of issue with the weeds because they would be lower in the water and not as close to the sunlight, so it would discourage growth.
Deeper lakes in general just then grow fewer weeds in them.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll point out, Dan said he'd like to make Park Lake Road itself more walkable and enable more walkers to safely enjoy the lake that way. To what extent do you agree with that?
100%. I turned in a proposal to the township last year. We, Friends of Park Lake, turned in a proposal last year to encourage and get Bath Township to widen Park Lake Road, at least with 5 to 6 feet on one side, that it would allow for safe use by walkers, bikers, people with wheelchairs, and strollers.
Does future development concern you, or is the area around the lake zoned in a way that prevents that? Or
we have one spot on the lake which used to be a trailer park, which is now for sale. It's up on the bluff. I don't think that will cause a problem as far as development is concerned. The land around the lake that you can build on, we've pretty much saturated. There are very few places left on the lake that you can build. So I'm not really concerned about future development myself.
I'm curious, is a trail alongside the lake a possibility? Are there opportunities for trails along Park Lake?
That's what we're working on with the Nature Preserve on the southwest side of the lake.
Okay.
And we're trying to make that so that it would connect to bike routes that are already existing in Clinton and Ingham County.
Judith Gardy is the president of the nonprofit, the Friends of Park Lake. The 186-acre lake is situated in Bath Township in Clinton County on Park Lake Road. Would you like more members? About how many members do you have?
We can always use more members. We love to have new members. So we have about 157 members right now.
As long as you're here, I'd like to switch gears here into another initiative that you are involved in here, the Edgewood Scholars. Some of our listeners know about this, but quite a few of them don't know about it as well. Who are the Edgewood Scholars?
Edgewood Village is a nonprofit housing development corporation in Meridian Township, and the families in that development go to the East Lansing Public Schools. 7 years ago, we decided that it would be meaningful for the families in the village if we created a scholars program and invited all the fifth graders, then graduating fifth graders, to join the scholars program. And we made a commitment to them that by the time they graduated from high school, we would ensure that they received a letter of acceptance to a four-year institution of higher learning, or that they would be able to pursue a career that they were interested in. Our first scholar class had six members, six seniors that attend East Lansing High School, live in the village. They've all received letters to institutions of higher learning and will all go to college in the fall. Most of them will be the first members of their families to ever attend college.
How exciting. Very good. Well, we appreciate hearing about that. We appreciate hearing about all of the activities you're involved in here as president of the nonprofit 501c3, the Friends of Park Lake. Judith Gardy is the president of that organization. Judith, thank you and good luck.
Thank you very much.
This environmental segment of Current State is supported by Michigan State University's Knight Center for Environmental Journalism. For more news on the Great Lakes environment, you can check out greatlakesecho.org. Current State on 90.5 WKAR. How often do you think about what you are smelling? Did you just take a whiff because I asked that? What did you smell? Well, Ann Arbor's Michelle Krell Kidd wants you to think more about that. She is a fragrance expert who runs the Smell and Tell series at the Ann Arbor District Library. She's editor of the olfactory-centric blog called Glass Petal Smoke and has given a TED Talk about her mysterious sense of smell. Michelle spoke with Current State's Jamie Paisley about how smell can be undervalued, particularly when we use one sense perhaps a little too much.
I think we live in what academics would call an ocular-centric culture, which is a fancy way of saying a visual culture. We are, you know, if you believe in evolution, when we went from being on all fours to being upright, the sense of sight became more dominant. And what's very interesting about smell is it's designed to protect you and also so that you enjoy things like food and the great smells of spring that we have here in Michigan now. So I think it's undervalued because you can't see it working.
There is also a danger to those that are anosmic, those people that don't have the sense of smell.
That is absolutely true, and it's just been discovered, I'd say, in the last few years in terms of, I shouldn't say so much discovered as being proclaimed by science, because one of the first signs of neurodegenerative disease of the brain is smell loss. And what that means is, if you think about food, when we eat, smell plus taste equals flavor. So if you remove smell, it's like having a cold. You get the textures. You will get what's called the tongue tastes, which are sweet, salty, bitter, umami, you know, the umami means savory, and sour, of course. And then you get another sensation, which is distributed by the trigeminal nerve, and that helps you detect the coolness of peppermint, the heat of spicy foods, etc. So if you're just getting that, you can imagine that texture of food would probably be something that would get a little hinky sometimes if you can't get that full three-dimensional taste. And because there is more of this awareness, the word anosmia is understood by more people, probably not as many as should, but it is a very critical sense, actually, because when you smell, right, the way your brain is wired is that you feel and remember smells first, and then the part of the brain that handles language then gives you the words to articulate things. So it's a very emotional sense, and I think if you unpack that, that also illustrates why it's a little bit of a difficult one to work with, you know?
Yeah. Is there a way that one can improve or at least test the nasal capacity, so to speak?
Yeah, sure. What I would say almost may sound a little zen. I think you have to pay attention to the sense to start to develop an understanding of just how valuable it is in your life. So let's start with breathing, right? Because if we don't breathe, we don't live. And if you pay attention to what's around you in your ordinary day, if you walk, if it's the smell of cut grass when you get out of the house or the smell of autumn leaves after they've fallen, you know, if it's the smell of dry earth before rain, something that's called petrichor that's linked to a molecule called geosmin, which is the jasmine of the earth. All these things are always going on around you. You might walk by a bakery or a coffee shop that has a vent, and you're picking that up so that you could almost tell where you were on a street if you were blindfolded. So I'd say pay attention first as you breathe. And then in the ordinary things you do every day, slow down when you're eating and pay attention to what you're tasting in your mouth in combination with smell. Pinch your nose for a moment and see what it's like to eat that way, and then let go and pay attention to that. And then you'll start to develop the capacity to appreciate what that sense does for you.
So then it begs the question, for where you are right now, what are you smelling wherever you are?
Okay, so I'm in my home office, and I currently have three things on perfume blotters. One is a true tincture of something called ambergris. The other is an absolute of rose from Turkey, which is a concentrated form of rose. So rather than steam distilled, it's distilled through the use of solvents, usually hexane, sometimes carbon dioxide, in this case hexane. And I have a pine cone I found yesterday that's also on my desk, so I can kind of smell the pine cone.
We're speaking with Michelle Krell Kidd, who is certainly the nose of Ann Arbor. I think that is the nickname you have.
I've been called a lot of things, yes. I think the evangelist of aroma in Ekern was the last moniker I received.
We're speaking with her, and in addition to speaking about the sense of smell, you also edit a blog on fragrances and smelling called Glass Petal Smoke. And I understand how petal, you know, flower petal and smoke are part of mm-hmm. the scent scenery, but where does glass enter into that title?
Well, I have to tell you how I came up with the name, because it's sort of funny. When I decided that this was going to be something I was going to do 9 years ago, I was thinking, what's the direction I want to take? And then my mind flitted to a GPS device. Just that's where my brain went. But when I think about perfumery, right, anything that's housed in a bottle is a perfume, right? And flower petals, right, become perfume. But incense, the smoke part, that's actually the first perfume, because if you separate the words perfumum, means through smoke. And the belief when incense was burned back in early days was that the smoke carried prayers to deities, and then singular deity as we went into monotheism. So I felt that that would be, you know, nice. It was a little artsy. I kind of liked it, and it stuck. People really like it. I get questions and comments about it all the time.
Yeah. You said 9 years ago. So how did you get into nasal concerns in the pre-internet age?
Wow. I should tell you how I got discovered as a nose, because that was interesting. I'm a native New Yorker. I was working for Microsoft when 9/11 happened in an office they had in New York. And I kind of had a turnaround then that day where I thought, my gosh, am I living an authentic life? You know, it was very overwhelming experiencing, you know, the collective emotion, the smells, the sights, and everything of that day. And a little further down in my career, I ended up working for trade publications and found myself in an environment with people who were getting olfactory training to promote a scent by Mont Blanc. I sat in this class, and I was an observer. I was encouraged to be a participant. I identified 20 out of 23 raw materials blind, and the instructor took me out of the room afterwards and told me I needed to go to school. And I said, why? I was like, because at that time I was, I think I was 40. And I said, you know, they're not going to hire me as a perfumer. I'm too old. They typically hire people in their 20s to give them a period of time to train, et cetera. And plus, we lose our sense of smell a little as we age. So I listened to the instructor. He became a very good friend. And I felt that the beauty of what I had learned should be accessible to everyone. And because the Internet was just starting to flower with fragrance blogs, I decided that I was going to have an educationally rooted blog. And it's proven to actually be a great choice and a good formula, you know, 9 years later, you know, still kicking it here.
In addition to the blog, you're also giving, you've given several kind of smell and tell lectures as well, and you're still
yeah.
in the process of that.
See, I moved in here on Halloween in 2011, and in 2012, I really wanted to get involved in community work because that's a big part of what I enjoy and also what I feel is really necessary as a full human being. And I volunteered at 826 Michigan. I designed Smell and Tell as a way to teach children about writing stories and learning how to talk about things they can't see. That was very successful. And I thought, well, maybe we can do this with adults, too. I thought about, you know, my perfumery training and reflected on how adults sort of interact with smell in that setting. And so I changed, you know, the curriculum a little bit. And in 2012, started the Smell and Tell series at Ann Arbor. And I've done 6 consecutive ones this year. They're typically spaced out, but the demand is getting higher. We get more people in a room than they typically get at a talk at the library. I'm most grateful to Erin Helmrich, who organizes the event and events for teens at the library, because her mind was open when I approached her about a sense that usually doesn't get a lot of attention.
Smell is obviously, if you're going to be instructing in that, that's a multimodal sort of tool that you're using. Does that go beyond age? Does it affect the special needs learner as well?
It does, and this is what's absolutely amazing to me. Children have different ways of learning. Some learn more through the sense of sight. Some learn more through the sense of hearing. Some learn more through the sense of smell. So Maria Montessori, she was really interested in honoring the full holistic student from where they stood. So when you look at the autism spectrum, we know that multisensory learning is very, very helpful. And in children with autism, I found out at an event at AADL that the scientific literature that exists, which defines 2 experiences for children with autism, which is either they smell too much, they're too sensitive, or they don't smell well, was not true in my experience in working with that population there and at 826 Michigan. My sense was that you had to understand who they were, where their sensitivities were, and then provide them with materials at doses that they could, you know, receive. I think it would be helpful in hospice settings. I think it would be helpful. Smell and tell would be great for people dealing with PTSD, give them some new memories around some really beautiful materials that they may not have encountered before. I know there's work being done in research in how to take bad memories and transform them so they don't affect people as much. Smell is part of some of that research. There's a lot that can be done.
Michelle Krell Kidd, editor of the fragrance blog Glass Petal Smoke and curator of the Smell and Tell series at the Ann Arbor District Library. Thanks very much for speaking with us.
You're very welcome. Thank you.
For Current State, I'm Jamie Paisley.
And that's our show for today. Tomorrow on Current State, there are more than 60 unsolved murders on the books in the city of Lansing, some of which date back to the 1960s. The city has assigned one police detective to its cold case unit. Keeping each case a high priority is a challenge for the department, and the families of murder victims are doing their best to cope after years of waiting for answers. We'll take a look at the emotional impact of unsolved murders in Lansing. That and more tomorrow here on Current State. The executive producer of Current State is Peter Wharf. Katie Cook directed our show today. Thanks also to Scott Pohl, Kevin Lavery, Jamie Paisley, and to Drew Hill. The Current State podcast is your informative, insightful, and indispensable connection with what's happening around mid-Michigan and beyond. The Current State podcast, anywhere, anytime, at iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts. Connect with us on Twitter at KAR Current State. On Facebook, we're at Current State from WKAR. And don't forget pop-up stories tomorrow night. The birds and the bees. We talk all about it with our guest storytellers starting at 6 o'clock at the Robin Theater in Rio Town. Have a great day. I'm Mark Bayshore. It's Current State on WKAR.